Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Bring it back.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Jake, a Newcastle fan. You get me on Twitter at Jake Jackman with two N's.
Hi, everybody. My name's Thomas. I'm the editor of wolvesblog.com, which is unsurprisingly a fan site dedicated to Wolverhampton Wanderers. If you want to get me on Twitter, you can do so at wolvesblog.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining me today, guys. We're going to start off by pretending that Tottenham result didn't just happen. We'll start off with Project Big Picture, which has already been proposed and died in the time since the last show that we did. But I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on the idea on the whole and kind of the discourse and vitriol that surrounded it.
Yeah, it was an interesting discussion. I think that ultimately, they've come to the right decision, but that's because they don't have the voting system that they were proposing in, which is pretty much the only reason it didn't happen. Just before I get into the actual proposal and some of the bullet points, I read quite an interesting piece on The Athletic this week, which had a bit about the top six and just the boardroom dynamics that go on in top six clubs and the Premier League, and it there was quite an interesting story about where these top six clubs at one meeting where they were discussing a TV deal that there wasn't like an agreement in the room, and then at one coffee break the top six clubs all got together in a little huddle in the corner, which makes me feel like that's the dynamic that goes on in these meetings, that although they might be I don't know, rivals on the pitch, off the pitch they're very much not, and that makes sense because they've got a lot of the same, I guess, objectives and a lot of the same interests in regards to the distribution of money and the amount of teams in the league and trying to maintain their status. So yeah, it's not too surprising that they've tried to get in a few more of those regulations to allow them to play more in Europe, make more money themselves, try to step away a little bit more from the even distribution of TV money. I mean, I don't think that it is completely even anymore. There is some percentage that is weighted on how much you do play on television. So yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. I feel like I feel like we're going to be going in the direction where more of these measures will be coming in. I think maybe it was outvoted this time, but I think that the top six teams, if you know, the threat of the European Super League and the threat of more Champions League games, that they do have a lot of power, even if they don't have the voting rights yet. So I think we're going to see more of it. But, you know, to me, happening a couple of days after the pay-per-view thing, it just sort of makes you want to turn off a little bit from the game, to be honest, if you're not supporting one of these top clubs. It just feels like fans are very secondary to all of this. It's in the proposals that, you know, there's some good stuff in there about tickets for away fans and things like that, but it does feel just all of it just feels like we're in like a big game of house of cards, and we're not the fans don't really mean that much, and what is happening on the pitch isn't the primary focus. Because I think that what makes the Premier League so good is that you do have so many competitive teams. Like I mean, I support one of the worst teams in the league, but we've still got players that are very good and on their day can do great things. And a reason why we can have players like Saint-Maximin and Callum Wilson is because of the distribution of funds and the way it is, allows the lesser clubs to go and spend big money. We've seen it with promoted clubs recently. Leeds going out and buying Rodrigo wouldn't be able to do that if the Premier League wasn't set up in this way. And these proposals made me feel like, especially United, move more towards the La Liga system of them making so much more than their competitors, which, you know, in their own interest, of course, they want to do that. But I feel like it would water down the league, and they might be making more money in the short term, but in the long term, it would hurt the overall health of the league and the competition that they play in. So it didn't really make a lot of sense to me. I think the stuff of the EFL was good, but it definitely felt like they were paying off the EFL now to get these voting rights in to later take all of this away. It did feel a little bit like that, with the EFL club being in such desperate need of money. It just didn't really fit too well with me. There was a lot of good ideas in there, but the good ideas within there take away from the really bad ideas that were also in there. So I'm happy it didn't go through, and it has started a conversation. I don't think it's the end of it, even though it was voted down. I think that a lot of these will be brought back. I think the 18-team Premier League is one that they're probably going to bring back, because it would open up more space in the calendar, limit the amount of games they have to play domestically, and maybe if the Champions League does get bigger, which is being proposed, they would have the time to do that. That's one I don't think we're gonna see go away too soon. I think the voting rights will probably come up again at some point. But yeah, it was a bit of a weird one. They made those changes. I think it would hurt them even in the long run as well. I don't think it would be good for them, because the reason why they make so much in sponsorship is because the Premier League is so widely watched. And one of the reasons for that is the competitiveness of the league. Like, I'll keep going back to it, because that is the Premier League's biggest selling point. And it's the reason why, you know, Manchester United, Liverpool, Manchester City, Chelsea, etc., can make so much more than a lot of clubs around the world in commercial contracts as well, because so many people watch it. Like, if we got up to viewing figures for the Premier League compared to La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga, I think we see a huge difference. I don't have those numbers in front of me. I wish I did, but I feel like if we did get what they were proposing to come in, I think the Premier League would lose some of that that attraction in other places as well, which, you know, would hurt them in the long term. So yeah, there's a lot of good ideas, a lot of bad ones. But yeah, the bad ones are the ones you've got to be focusing on. And I think that there's going to be a lot more plotting going on behind the scenes, and we'll see a lot more proposals like this. And I think that because they voted against the plan this time, they'll probably use that as a negotiation to get something in the coming months and years. So yeah, it's not great, and I'm glad it didn't get put through, but I fear we're going to be coming into some of these changes at some point down the line.
Yeah, I'd echo most of what Jake said there. It did feel like they were just trying to bury, certain policies that were beneficial to the Big Six, in amongst other things that may have taken, deflected that away. And it had a bad smell, didn't it? It was like, well, we'll give this money to that the EFL clubs desperately need. We'll give it to them, but it's going to come at this price. And then on top of that, we're going to use it to leverage our position in the Premier League and create, you know, a more ring-fenced area for us, the elite club. So yeah, it stank and it had to be thrown out. There was some interesting points in it, you know, as Jake touched on, reducing the Premier League to 18 clubs. I think a lot of people would probably be in favour of that. I don't really have a strong opinion. If there's a good argument for that and it frees up fixtures and makes things, you know, means we don't have to have these same conversations about fixture congestion, then maybe that'd be something good. Getting rid of the EFL Cup and the Community Shield. I don't know why you get rid of the Community Shield. I don't feel like, okay, I don't think it's as popular, but it's just one game. So I don't really understand what my understanding is. That was basically a glorified friendly that raised money for charities. I don't really understand why you'd scrap that. But the EFL Cup, obviously, I think that competition needs a rethink. They need to do something with that. So I was up for that. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing about the, you know, changing the voting system, and the way they tried to bury it, they started by saying, well, actually, we'll give 9 clubs who have been in the league the longest. You know, that kind of had an element of credibility, you know. But then they said, actually, but only the top 6, the Big 6, will be able to vote on the major changes, which, again, it's just kind of elitism. And it just stank, didn't it? So, yeah, I'm glad it got thrown out. I think it raised some interesting points. And if anything good does come out of this, it will allow us to change the game for better, address hopefully some of the financial differences between the Premier League and the EFL, make the competition fairer, But I don't think some of those things in that list would have actually made the competition fairer. So I assume Wolves voted against it. And my understanding is all 14 clubs who weren't the Big Six voted against it. And I think the way that the Premier League put it forward, that they'd unanimously agreed that it wasn't the right thing, was probably just a face-saving exercise for most Big Six clubs who realised that actually it made them look pretty foolish and looked like they were taking advantage of a bad situation. So I'm a bit more hopeful than Jake, probably. I think that we might end up with something that shows a little bit more humility and an acceptance of, you know, where we are, you know, in the world, not just in football. But yeah, I think it was an interesting week, that's for sure, and an interesting starting point to see where it actually ends up.
Yeah, agreed. And I do think it's important that, like, a lot of managers and other people high up in football all came out saying that this needs to benefit, you know, all parties at all levels of the football pyramid. I think Bielsa and Mourinho both spoke out about that, and I'm sure others did as well. It just seemed like maybe not the best idea, and another in a continual string of not necessarily great PR for the Premier League following, obviously, the pay-per-view stuff, which we will not get into. But yeah, just so somebody at those offices needs to try to sort some things out to maybe boost the credibility of the league at the moment, which is currently sinking amongst most fans. All right, we will go from there to talking about last year's title winners. Liverpool have had a weird start to the season. Obviously, that Aston Villa match stands out as the weirdest. But yesterday, they have the Merseyside derby. A couple of VAR decisions end up going against them. Ends up being a draw with Everton, who I think are still top of the table, if I'm not mistaken. But the big one is that the first VAR call was on Jordan Pickford, who kind of scissor tackled Virgil van Dijk's knee. It was deemed that he was offside, and there have been mixed reports on whether or not VAR actually looked at the foul from Pickford, or if they were only looking at the offside to give the penalty rather than potentially giving a red card. But that injury has now been reported by Liverpool to be the knee injury that will require him to get surgery. Will probably last for the rest of the season if it is his ACL, which they haven't confirmed exactly what kind of knee injury it was, but that was certainly the perspective of most after that match. But I just wanted to talk to you guys some about where that leaves Liverpool. Obviously, they had the best defense in the Premier League last year. They have basically done since Van Dijk rocked up to Anfield. That leaves them probably with Gomez and Matip, potentially Fabinho dropping back. I think he's played at center back for them a few times now. But how do you consider the strength of their defensive line moving forward?
Yeah, it's a bit of a worry, really, for Liverpool. I think that they have such a good system. And the system is the main reason for their success, rather than individuals, I'd say. But at the same time, there are a few key pieces to that team. And by losing them, they do regress quite a lot. And we've seen that already this season with Alisson moving on to Adrian for a few matches. That hasn't gone well. Moving away slightly, but Adrian didn't look confident at all yesterday. And obviously, he was mainly at fault for the way things went to begin with Aston Villa. I just think the lack of confidence that they have in him is really shown. And I think that's partially true as well of when Van Dijk goes off. I think if you're saying the most important player on that team, you'd say Van Dijk, both out of possession. I think he's very, very good one-on-one defender. I think he's very, very good aerially, and he's quite important in their build-up play quite regularly. He has more than, you know, 70, 80 passes a match, and he's quite important in launching a lot of those attacks. And I don't think that Matip or Gomez can quite do that in the same way. They're probably inferior one-on-one defending aerially and on the ball. So to have them both playing at the same time, it's going to hurt them a lot. And it's going to be similar to how Manchester City went last season. As soon as Laporte went out, we just saw them concede so many sloppy goals. And we've already seen it in that derby game. Liverpool looked like they were going to concede every single time a ball came into the box aerially. They just didn't look comfortable. And I think that's going to continue. Teams are going to target that. I think it's going to hurt them. But I think it's going to hurt them in possession as well. I don't think they're going to be as fluid. I think Thiago coming in helps because he can probably take on a lot of that load by going to drop deeper and pick up the ball. But I still think it's going to hurt them a lot. And again, they're just one injury away from a crisis. they don't really have any cover there. They have Fabinho, but if you move Fabinho there, you lose something in the midfield. They could play a young player, but they probably don't want to do that. Selling Lovren was the right decision, but not bringing anybody else in, even if it was somebody to that you didn't expect to play too often. I think that was a bit of a mistake now looking back at it. Yes, it doesn't look good for Liverpool. I'd quite happily say that I can't see them winning the league now. I just don't think they can. I think they'll be up there, but because I don't think any team clearly looks like they're a well-oiled machine to run away with it, like City did a couple of years, 3 years ago, and Liverpool did last season. But yeah, without Van Dijk and without Alisson, even for the next couple of matches, I think that it's really difficult to see Liverpool keeping many clean sheets. And if, you know, by doing that, they're probably going to drop a lot more points than they did last year. And yeah, it's a major blow. And I think it's really unfortunate that it came in a way that could have been avoided. There was no need for Pickford to fly out like that. You can really understand the anger shown towards him among Liverpool fans in a derby as well. It's not great. And for their best player to go out like that, I think there will be a lot of injuries this year because of the amount of games, but to lose a player because of the recklessness of another professional is really, really disappointing. And I think that the VAR really needs to, the match officials really need to look at themselves. And I think that Liverpool are right to ask the question why that there wasn't a red card there. They're absolutely right. There should have been a red card, even if it was offside. It was reckless, endangering a fellow professional. And we saw it on the coverage in the UK on BT. The official that they had, or the former official they have, I can't remember. I think it's Peter Walton in the studio was talking about. He said in the broadcast that it should have been a red card, and that never happens. Like the amount of times that the former official sticks with the on-field call, they very rarely disagree with it. So I think that was telling, and I think that, you know, Liverpool have every right to be disappointed with the decision, with the process, and with the two drop points, because if there would have been a red card there, they probably would have come with 3 points. So yeah, it wasn't a great showing for the match officials yesterday, and it's going to hurt Liverpool for a lot longer than just this weekend. I think that their chances of winning any major trophies this year, I can't see it myself.
Yeah, having the world's best defender ruled out for the season probably is always going to be a bit of a setback. And if you look at that, if you look at Liverpool and how they play as a team, their shape, you know, Robertson and Trent, they're not exactly, you know, defence-minded fullbacks, are they? They're almost like wingbacks. And you know, I think there'd be a concern for Liverpool that Trent's not really having the kind of impact they had last season, even as an attacker. And I've heard it said that, you know, he's not the best defender. He's actually a terrible defender. He's such an attacking weapon that it makes up for things, but he can't defend. Every time he's attacked, he's woefully exposed. And a lot of the goals they concede come from things that are either directly or inadvertently his fault. So I think they've got a big problem, and I think it will really underline how much Van Dijk was holding that back four together. Because they're going to be targeted in attack now. Touching on what Jake said about Fabinho, I think that's exactly what Klopp will do. I think he will play Fabinho in the back four a hell of a lot. I think Gomez is still quite raw for me. I think Matip's the better player as things stand at the moment. If those two were to play together, they'd probably be all right a lot of games. If Liverpool were quite dominant, which you'd expect them to be, maybe 60, 70% of the time, but then in the more competitive games, I think that's where the percentage points will become more apparent. And so it's interesting. I don't think I'd go as far as Jake and say they've got no chance of doing anything just because Van Dijk's out. I think obviously Alisson's a blow as well, but I don't know how long he's out for, but if he's back before too long, that would be helpful to them. And I think they're good enough as an attacking force, and they've got good enough midfield that they can protect that back four and dominate enough games to be competitive. And I don't think there's an outstanding team coming through who look like they're just going to rattle off 10, 15 wins as Man City and Liverpool have done over recent years. It looks a more open competition. So that's probably in their favour in one sense. So I think it's obviously a massive hammer blow to Liverpool to lose Van Dijk. But I think they can probably cope and be competitive. But it might be the percentage points that ultimately cost them the title.
If you think that it is so uncertain whether or not they'll be able to get there, and in fact, it sounds like the two of you are certain that Liverpool won't be able to repeat their title without Van Dijk, which teams do you think are in the mix? I obviously would have tried to insert Tottenham before today's match. Now, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to answer this question because although I don't think Liverpool will win it now, there's not an obvious replacement for them. I'd probably say Man City. I said them at the start of the season, and although they've not been great so far, I think that they're probably the most most balanced team out there. After that Van Dijk injury, I think that they're slowly getting people back into the team. We saw Aguero at the weekend. Might take him a few weeks to get up and running, but we know if for the matches that he plays, he's going to score at a very high rate. That, you know, there's no doubting that he's done it for years, and that's not going to stop now, especially in a team that creates as much as City. I think De Bruyne, when he's back, you know, we know he's probably the best player in the league. We know that. Laporte is slowly getting back to fitness. He's being managed quite well by Guardiola. And I think that Diaz and Ake, with time, will probably improve the defence. I thought they were quite good against Arsenal yesterday defensively. They weren't as gung-ho as they have been, and they controlled the game a little bit more. Arsenal still had a couple of chances, but I thought that it was a much better team performance from City, and something that they've been missing for well over a year now. So it is encouraging sign, especially when you don't have De Bruyne on the pitch or Laporte. It was good for them to deliver that performance. That would probably go towards City. I don't think Chelsea and Tottenham don't seem to have the defences or the game management to get close to a title at this point. Although they're the two teams that were most active in the window, so maybe they're gonna slowly grow into the season, and maybe they will be able to put together that run eventually. But at the moment, they just look like they're gonna drop points every game, and Tottenham to drop points to us and to West Ham in the last minutes doesn't bode well for the game management, which is something that you'd expect Mourinho to have brought in by now. So, yeah, it's probably still between Liverpool and Manchester City, but I think that it's worth saying about the Champions League and the schedule that's going to bring in, and the Europa League as well. There's going to be games. I think the Champions League schedule is nearly every week now. I think there might be one rest week, but it's nearly every week. So it's going to be a lot more injuries, a lot more fatigue, and I think it's going to lead to a lot more open Premier League games and a lot more drop points that we've already seen. So, we've said that we might never see a title victory like Leicester again, but if there was ever going to be a surprise title winner, whether that be an Arsenal, a Tottenham or a Chelsea, a slight surprise, or an even bigger surprise such as an Everton, Leicester or maybe even Aston Villa, or Wolves, if there was ever to be something like that, it would be this year. I don't think they will. I'm not saying I'm going to expect any of those teams to do it, but if there was to be another season like that, it would be this year. I'm leaning towards City, but I think it's going to be really open. I think we're going to see, at least up until about December, we're going to see a lot of teams not that far off it. I think there's going to be a lot of drop points. I think it's going to make for quite an exciting league. But City are the ones that I think I've most hoped for in putting together a team and finding a structure that can go on and win enough games to win the title. But yeah, it is really open. And although I ruled Liverpool out early, I'm starting to think that maybe they've got a chance again, just because of how well they know the system and just the winning mentality they have. But no, I'd lead towards City, but it is so open.
Yeah, the points, the pace that's set will be very interesting, because it doesn't look like it's going to be anything like it was in the last, three seasons. So it will keep it more interesting. Expect more teams to stay, within touching distance. But all the teams, like Chelsea, Tottenham, just don't look like they can defend. They could look like they're going to score hatfuls of goals, but they're also going to concede a lot. So it's a case of whether, you know, either of those teams can get their act together defensively. You'd think Tottenham with Mourinho, that would be something that would be, you know, a situation that he would welcome, where he's got all these attacking weapons, but he just needs to get a shape and a balance between attack and defence. So, I mean, I would give them the benefit of the doubt. Chelsea just don't think have the personnel to even address the defensive issues they've got. They just went in way too heavy at one end and didn't invest well enough. I think Arsenal are quite interesting, but I just don't think they're quite there. But, you know, I mean, because they've seen off a lot of teams, but then they've come up against Liverpool and Man City, and they've come up short in those games, which is probably an indicator about what, you know, where they actually are. Top four realistic, but and Everton, it's too early to probably say. It's just basically a case of seeing if Liverpool and Man City can actually string together, you know, sequences of results now, you know, because we've seen them have a sort of bitty start to the season, show glimpses of form, but not really sustain it over a long period of games. So, you know, it's just a case of whether one of them can string together those 5, 6, 7 wins in a row to take them clear. But if not, it's going to be a massive scrum, like Jake says, you know, going all the way to Crystal, which is great, really, because that's ultimately what we want. We want competition, and we want it to be as close as possible. So, but yeah, like, outside of Man City and Liverpool, it's a complete coin toss to think who could actually gate crash that.
Yeah, I think you both raised points. I think Liverpool and City definitely still the favorites, but yeah, it could be anyone. Like, if Everton can somehow keep up the pace all year, like the Leicester year when we were all like, surely they can't do this all year, and then they just kept doing it week on week. If Everton can do it, I totally understand the point about Tottenham and Chelsea not being able to defend, but if all of a sudden something clicks and that defense turns around, like the Leicester year as well, when Ranieri started offering pizza for clean sheets, then yeah, we could see somebody really surge. But I think based on past evidence, you're both right. It has to still be Liverpool and City in some combination of 1 and 2, and then everybody else trying to fight up to get there. And there are so many clubs in that pack right behind them. But we'll see how that kind of sifts itself out as the season progresses. I wanted to wrap up this first section of the show by talking a little bit about tactics, which we used to do kind of in the early years of the show. We kind of drifted away from it, but I'd like to get back there now. Seifu, who used to edit this show, and I were talking before the Tottenham match about how we don't really play in the formation that we publish in like the pre-match tweet when the team is announced. And I was just curious with you guys if that's true for you as well. Do you stick to the actual formation, in air quotes, from like start to finish? Do you adjust depending on whether or not you're in possession or out of possession? Or do you just kind of do a whole bunch of random 11 people on the pitch stuff?
Yeah, we definitely do the random 11 players on the pitch stuff. We have a manager that doesn't know what a tactics board is. He just throws 11 men on the pitch and hopes for the best. And just I saw quite a good tweet yesterday from one of the Newcastle fanzines about how, you know, Bruce always is very critical of the criticism he receives, and he always says, oh, we're a work in progress. You know, it's difficult to change a style, but I've seen signs that we are starting to achieve what I want us to achieve. But if you watch us play, especially in the Tottenham, Manchester United and Brighton matches this season, it's, you know, if the plan is to concede all of the territory, let them shoot at goal as many times as they'd like, then we are close to achieving that. But I can't imagine that is the plan. So it's very difficult to defend Steve Bruce at the moment. And if I look back at the Newcastle managers we've had previously, I think this is going to go into a Steve Bruce front rather than tactics. But if we look at the ones we've had previously, you know, even Pardew and McLaren, there was some tactical acumen there. Even if they ultimately were bad, you could see what the plan was. But with Bruce, you just can't see what he's trying to do. In the four or five matches we've had this season, we played like a different setup in three or four of those matches. We played 4-4-2 or what was looked like a 4-4-2, a 4-2-3-1. We've played a five at the back system. It's just constantly changing. And the plan definitely seems to be, let's hope our goalkeeper pulls off so many good saves and Alan Saint-Maximin does something at the other end to get us somewhere. But that is not a plan. It's not a tactic. You know, we watched Palace today, and watching Palace today against Brighton, they conceded a lot of shots. They weren't very attacking after they scored the penalty, but they seemed to have depth or control on the game that we just don't have in our matches. We just this constantly letting shots go in and go. I think to this season, the amount of shots that Tottenham and Manchester United had against us were two of the highest totals in the Premier League in the last two or three seasons, which is just ridiculous. That's happened twice with our team this year already. It's really not great. Under Rafa, there was some sort of discipline there, but there just isn't that at the moment. We are really just hoping our goalkeeper makes loads of saves and we can nick something on the counter attack to get something, and it's not sustainable. There was a stat that came up in the broadcast yesterday that Cole Dahl has made more saves than any other European goalkeeper this season. That I think Martin Dubravka led wow. that statistic last season. You know, you don't want to be your goalkeeper to be leading that statistic. Yeah, it looks great for them. Cole Dahl has done his reputation a world of good so far this season. But you don't want your goalkeeper to be making that many saves. It suggests that there's not a great deal of coaching or defensive transition or defensive acumen in the coaching setup. So yeah, we've got the biggest tactical dinosaur there is going. The players love him. You see Saint-Maximin come out and praise him when he signed his new contract. Shelby often praises him because he lets them do what they want. There's no tactics in Newcastle. We probably will stay up because we've got a good amount of talent in the team. That against teams like West Ham and Burnley, we could go on and win matches and play okay. But even in those matches, there's not a great deal of setup. It is just hoping our goalie makes a lot of saves and the attackers do something. So yeah, it's not great and it's not going to get any better. I think this is the manager I could compare Steve Bruce most to it out of the Newcastle managers in the last few seasons is John Carver. So yeah, that tells you all you need to know about Steve Bruce and his tactics. He's not great at them. He doesn't know what they are.
Yeah, well, slightly different when you know, I think, than what Jake's saying there. Wolves, to answer your question, Wolves play three at the back, obviously very rigid, two holding midfielders, very rigid, and Raul Jimenez up top, and that's always the same. It doesn't matter what, variety of the shape that Nuno chooses. It's always that is the backbone of the team. I think there's some more interesting things happening around that. Obviously, the wing-backs do what the wing-backs do. They occupy the areas of the pitch you kind of expect. But depending on the personnel, I mean, last season we had Johnny and Matt Doherty as the wing-backs, and they like to come inside and get involved with the play, and they would often look like midfielders more than wingers or, defenders. So that was quite interesting. But now we've got Semedo and we've got Markel, and they like to stay wide and they like to push further up the pitch. So that's kind of subtly changed the shape of the team a little bit. And then the other thing that's slightly different this season, whereas before we kind of had Jimenez and either two more sort of wide players with him or one centre forward alongside him, we've now got sort of one player playing just deep of him and one playing shifted out to the right, and that this is Nuno trying to be more possession based, trying to play more passes through the middle, sort of evolve the team a bit more. So it's kind of it's always the same shape, and I think out of possession, it always drops into that five at the back with two holding midfielders, and that's been the foundation of what made Wolves successful, because they've been difficult to beat. They get a lot of bodies behind the ball. Make it very difficult. Positionally, they're very aware of where they need to be, well drilled. So yeah, I think Nuno really doesn't like talking about formations. He always likes to talk about shape. There's this big thing. And Pep's the same. He calls formations telephone numbers, doesn't he? He doesn't like saying, 4-2-3-1, whatever. He just says, players have position. And I think there is something in that, because I think it's quite almost an outdated thing to talk about formation, because it players are asked to do much more specific things. There's much more science to it now about starting positions and movements. I think all teams, even Jake, will probably you'd be surprised that there are probably instructions about what to do in and out of possession for most teams in the league. But I think it does evolve. I don't think you can trust those pre-match graphics, put it that way, Kev.
Yeah, they insist on keep doing them, but I do agree. It feels like the game as a whole is moving past that, and you don't find a lot of managers talking about their formation as they line up and then expect players to stay in those exact areas throughout a match. It's just not really how football works. So it'll be interesting to see if in time the media companies shift a little bit away from that. But time will tell in that regard. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with club-specific questions for each of our guests.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
All right, and we are back. Jake, we'll start off with you. Yesterday's performance, much better than the final scoreline, but I was wondering if you were more impressed by the former or disappointed in the latter.
Difficult. I don't think the performance was very good. I don't think the scoreline was very good. So there we go. It was the problem we have is, I mean, I've gone over a lot already, but we just conceded so many shots that Manchester United didn't create too many clear-cut chances yesterday. But if you're going to let them have 30 shots in your goal with the quality of player they have, some of them will go in. That's just law of averages. You are just playing a numbers game there, and it's not a good one. There's just no urgency in the team to press. There's no urgency to win the ball back. They just sort of sit deep and just hope to block chances, which it's just not sustainable. Like we're playing against a Manchester United team low on confidence. Like, this is not a good Manchester United team. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is probably not going to be in that job for much longer. And we went 1-0 up. Yeah, it's a fortuitous goal, but we went 1-0 up. That was our time then to just press high and keep going for that second goal. Because I think if we'd have got another one, they would have just crumbled. Like that Manchester United team, if you press them high, you know, midfielders like Fred and McTominay and players like Harry Maguire, Lindelof, they're not very good when they're pressed. They're not the best at getting out of challenges and taking a step forward and beating a tackle. They just can't do it. So we played into Manchester United's hand yesterday. I'm sure they left the ground thinking, I can't believe we've got away with a game that was so easy as that, because it was easy for them. We had a few chances, but there was nothing too clear cut. Like Callum Wilson had quite a good chance. It was a good save from De Gea, but you know, you can't go back and say, oh, look, if that goes in, then maybe we take something from the game. Yeah, maybe we do, but at the same time, you want to be creating more than that, because Manchester United, I think they've probably got 5 or 6 things that they could say, oh, if we scored that, it's a different game, whereas we have one. It's 3 times that it's happened. It's happened against Brighton, it happened against Spurs, and it happened against Manchester United. One of those games, we got very fortunate and we got a point out of it. But against teams that can occupy the space in between the lines and can dominate the ball, we struggle. Like Harry Kane pretty much had the run of it against us, against Tottenham, against Brighton, Lamptey and Trossard were running the game. And then last night, Juan Mata, I think it was his first Premier League start in God knows how long, he ran the game yesterday because we just let him. And I think with the players we have, we've got players that we can press high, we can win the ball back, we can counter-attack well. We've got, you know, yesterday we were playing against a team low on confidence that just conceded 6 goals. And we had Ryan Fraser and Miguel Almiron sitting on the bench while we had Joel Linton and Jeff Hendrick and the team. We've just shown them far too much respect. And if you've got players like Jeff Hendrick and the team, you want them to press and try and win the ball back. And that just didn't happen. They were just sitting there. And we're the most passive team there is in the Premier League. The thing is, I think the thing with Bruce is, if you look at the results, if you look at, you know, where we are in the table, where we were last year, where we are this year, you know, 7 points from 5 games is fine. Into a Carabao Cup quarter final, it looks fine on paper. But if you watch Newcastle week in, week out, you'll just see how passive and just how uninspiring they are, and it is difficult to watch them. And it, and if any Newcastle fan paid the $49.95, I do feel sorry for them.
Well, not passive enough to not get a draw with Tottenham at the last minute, which is apparently a thing that happens now. But you said you weren't that inspired by the performance. I thought in the first half you played pretty well. And Alan Saint-Maximin just had all of the Manchester United midfielders and defenders on skates throughout that match. Obviously off the heels of a huge contract extension to stay at the club for another 5 years, if memory serves. What did you make of him individually and signing him up long term?
Yeah, I think he signed 6 years, so it's quite a good contract for him.
Wow,
he is the most important player on our team. I think our points per game with him and the team, as opposed to without, is markedly different. I think we've only won once when he hasn't played since he signed. So yeah, it's kind of similar to the Palace and Zaha thing that happened a few seasons ago. He's that important to us. I think with French players we've had before, they've often gone away and spoken back in French media about wanting to move on to bigger clubs. But you don't get that from Saint-Maximin. He seems really happy. I think from what I've read and from what people close to him say, he likes being a big fish in a small pond. He likes the freedom that he gets living in Newcastle. He lives outside the city. He has a lot of privacy to bring up. I think he's got three children. So, he enjoys the family life he has in Newcastle. He enjoys the status in the team he has. I think he enjoys the main man in the team. He doesn't want to go and sit and play for Arsenal and be a bit but player. He wants to be the main person, and he is that at Newcastle. I think he's fallen out of a lot of coaches, Patrick Vieira being one of them. But Bruce gives him a lot of freedom, and I think he likes that. So yeah, I think he's one we're going to see at Newcastle. But as long as we're a Premier League team, as long as we don't go down in the next two or three seasons, I think he'll be staying. And I think actually he'll get a good move, but he's still only 22 and he's learning his craft. And I think probably since we came back from lockdown, I think he's been really good in that period. He's added an end product that wasn't there, and could have got an assist yesterday for Wilson. I think Wilson coming in is going to give him a lot more assists, because last season he was getting into those positions and there was just nobody in the area to cross it to, whereas he has that this year. And yeah, I think he's going to... The fact we have him and we have Wilson is probably going to be enough to get us to safety. But yeah, he's so important. Like it's similar to Van Dijk. If he got injured for long term, I think we'd be in a very difficult position. But saying that, we seem to have a little bit of strength and depth in that position now. We have Joelinton, who played all right against Burnley a couple of weeks ago in a forward position. We've got Ryan Fraser still to come in, who's looked lively when he has played, and Almiron, who started very well in a couple of competitions, but seems to be out of favour in the league for some reason. So yeah, we've got a bit of strength in those areas. We've got a lot of exciting players. We just need to find a system that gets them all in and playing an attacking style. Because I think if we started to be a little bit more positive, and we have Almiron, Fraser, and set Max Mann on the pitch, even if it's for a short period, I think that Premier League defence is not going to want to go up against that. There's just so much pace, so much directness, so much trickery that it wouldn't be fun for defences, which is why we need to do it a little bit more often, I think. And hopefully, once we get past, we've got a few tricky games coming up, but I think after that, we play a lot of the teams that will be in the bottom half of the season. So hopefully in that period, we'll see a little bit more attack-minded team selections from Bruce, because I think we've got the players that could form into quite a good team, and Saint-Maximin will be the centrepiece of that.
Yeah, and then just finishing up, you mentioned Darlow and his infinite saves, and as you say, it looks great for a goalkeeper, but it's not a great sign for the defense. He was clearly injured as Manchester United were starting to pile in all of the goals in the final minutes of that match. Has there been any update on how he's doing, and if he's out and Dubravka's not back yet, what's the option there?
Yeah, he's, from what I've read, he seems to think he's going to be okay. But just watching the game, I've never seen a professional team just hope their goalkeeper comes through a knock. Like, I've never
in
seen
case
a goalkeeper
you
look that injured.
To that passive stuff that you were talking about earlier.
Exactly. It was, considering the goalkeeper is so important to us, it was a huge risk that wasn't needed. Because if you take him off and he's fine for the next game, that's fine. I think Bruce's management of players as well. I don't want to get too much into that again, but he does seem to push players to their limit. We saw Saint-Maximin in lockdown. He did it again when he could protect the player, even if it means you weaken yourself for a 20-minute period against Manchester United. You protect the player. We had it with Dubravka. I think he rushed him back from an elbow injury, and he's gone out again. It's he seems to really push his key players, which isn't good, especially in a season like this. So yeah, hopefully Dahl's okay. He seems to think he's going to be fine. But yeah, it was a weird one, and I was watching the game just thinking, I was literally screaming, saying, "Take the goalkeeper off! Just take him off!" And he didn't. But yeah, didn't matter in the end. We lost. But yeah, it was. I don't think his injury played into any of the goals, but it was a needless risk at that time. But yeah, hopefully he's going to be okay.
All right, well, best of luck there. Coming to now, Thomas, to talk a little bit about Wolves. Obviously, you haven't played yet this week, but I think 15th, or at least when I did my research this morning, isn't really where people would expect Wolves to be based on how you've performed the last few seasons. For those that haven't been watching you as much, why do you think you're in and around that area instead of kind of drifting in and around the top six?
Well, still early days, I think. It's been a strange season. We've only played four games, obviously. Some teams have played five. I think if we win at Leeds tomorrow, we'll be exactly where you just said. There's obviously the table still taking shape. We beat Sheffield United, and obviously subsequently they've had a bad start. We beat Fulham, so we've beaten the kind of, I don't want to call them whipping boys just yet because it's early in the season, but two teams that have struggled. So we kind of won games you expect us to win. We got beaten by Man City. We played badly for 20 minutes in the start of that game, and City were 2-0 up, and it was very difficult. But we've made a good game of it in the second half. We were unlucky to actually lose by the end. We created so many chances. And then we took a hell of a wallop in at West Ham, which just seemed to come out of absolutely nothing. But then West Ham have shown recently that they're able to produce moments and results. But what Wolves are in a transitional phase in one sense. They've started unpicking the team that kind of got us to where we are, and as Nuno said, trying to keep the fundamentals but kind of change the approach, give us a bit more versatility. And he's tinkering with the front three. He's bringing in Podence and Neto, whereas last season it was Jota and Traore getting most of the game time. So there's quite a lot of change in the team. There's three or four new bodies who are sort of weren't regulars last season, are regulars, seem to be regulars now, and new signings. So I think it's just one of those things that we may have a season where we perhaps aren't quite at the level we have been, just while we try to kind of discover a formula and a combination with these players that works. But I'm confident we'll be in the top half come the end of the season. Whether that's as high as seventh or higher or lower, I don't know. But I think it's still early days, and it's a crazy league, as we've touched on already. So I'm not drawing res of any sort of too many assumptions at this stage. I think Leeds tomorrow will be a nice benchmark, because we've seen them have a good start and cause teams problems. And it'll just be interesting to see how we get on against them. So every game at the moment feels like it's putting a benchmark down. We beat Fulham last time out to recover from that West Ham result. And that's the kind of sort of ugly win that I felt we needed to kind of give us a bit more confidence and belief. A lot of the players went out and did well for their international sides. So, I think we're in decent shape going to Leeds tomorrow. So that will be a good game. If we get a result there, I think it will properly get our season.
Yeah, obviously hasn't happened yet, though. But good luck in that one. I figure we could touch on the window, since there isn't that match to talk about, really. It was a weird one for you. I think Dave and I both gave it around a C in the big transfer show that we just did. What did you make of the window on the whole, and some of the kind of eyebrow-raising incomings and outgoings?
Yeah, I think the transfer window was quite mixed for Wolves. I think we were quite surprised by Jota and Doherty leaving. But as I said before, Nuno's been pretty open in that we have to evolve this team. Played well the last two seasons, finished seventh both times. But if you want to crack the top six and be competitive, with the elite clubs, I think he's realised we need to have more of the ball. We need to be slightly higher up the pitch, and we need to score more goals. I think we're really about 15. Although we were within touching distance of the Champions League last season, going into the last two or three games, I think there is a consensus that we're probably 10 or 15 goals shy of really, competing at that end. So I think that's what we've tried to do, be more attacking. you know, selling Matt Doherty in isolation looks a strange move, but then we brought in Nelson Semedo from Barcelona for 30 million. So if you're going to go and sign a bloke that's played regularly for Barcelona, you're going to say that's on paper looks an upgrade. And then letting Jota go, and we brought in Fabio Silva from Porto, who's supposed to be a brilliant prospect. And, you know, that was an area of the field where we're already very well stocked with Neto, Traore, Podence. So there was a question mark over whether Jota was going to be in the team anyway. So I think we've invested a lot in potential and players that can hopefully come into the team, you know, slowly and gradually over the course of the season and make a difference, but really be good players for Wolves for the next 3, 4, 5 years rather than, you know, those headline signings, with the exception of Semedo probably and Markel, who we brought in to play left wing back in cover of Johnny, who's out for a lot of the season. I think we're looking at the big picture and thinking, can we in the next 2 or 3 seasons find a team that can properly push on to that top six? So I can understand why you would have given it a C, because I don't think it's a very, you know, some of the arrivals aren't household names, but I've got confidence and belief based on the recruitment being pretty good for a long period at Wolves that they made a lot of the right decisions.
Gotcha. And then just quickly, you obviously have the Mendes ties that from the outside in looks a little shady. Obviously, Tottenham have now dipped our toes into those very same waters. What should I be on the lookout for?
Well, I mean, I don't know. If the thing is with Mendes, he's got a network of like 7 or 8 clubs that he generally shifts players around. And then in addition to that, he's obviously got a major foothold in Portuguese football in general. So players, if you're going to be doing business with him regularly, you're going to be getting a lot of players from Portugal or who are Portuguese. And then you can quite easily recognise transfer rumours that have credibility. So, for instance, in the last January transfer window, we were linked with all manner of players. And I was thinking, no, that doesn't sound right. Then as soon as I saw Daniel Podence, I thought, all right, Olympiacos, Portuguese, Gestafute Klein, which is Mendes' agency, that's going to happen. And lo and behold, a week later, he's there holding a Wolves shirt. So you begin to, you know, form predictions. I always, in the transfer window, have the website open that lists all the players who are his clients. And I literally look down it and think, who could be a viable target for us? And you'd be surprised how often you're able to identify the targets. I mean, he's say-so in Wolves. His influence on our transfer business is getting greater and greater with every passing window. I think every single player had his fingerprints on it that Wolves brought in 6 or 7 transfers. And even, you know, Matt Doherty became one of his clients, and then he was moved out. So it's, you know, it's ins and outs. He's having an increasing influence, not just on Wolves, but the whole Premier League.
All right, and we will end with match previews, which this week is very easy considering the two of you will be playing each other. Jake, we'll start off with your side first.
Yeah, games against Wolves have been weird recently, because I feel like Thomas will think that we cause them a lot of problems, but I also don't think we've ever beaten them. So it's a weird one. I think we should have won at Molineux a few seasons ago, but then Dubravka threw one in the net, which probably should have been given as a foul and probably would have been with VAR. Then last season, I think it was 1-1 at St. James's Park, and might have been 1-1 again at Molineux. There's been a lot of draws in this fixture. But then for all the issues we have playing against teams that are really good at dominating possession, I feel like Wolves is a game that we could perhaps going with a little bit of confidence of maybe getting something, because I think if we do put men behind the ball and let them have shots, I don't think Wolves have that many players that take a lot of shots, so that might not be as big of an issue as we've had before. I think Ruben Neves will probably have a few shots. But yeah, I think we will put men behind the ball, and although we are passive, that there's men behind the ball, so they're not going to have the space for Adama Traore to sprint in behind or anything like that. So yeah, it's probably a good matchup for us. I think that, especially going the other end as well, Callum Wilson's runs and the way he occupies centre-backs is going to cause him issues, similar to Antonio a few weeks ago. And I think Maximan, if he's running at Markel, Cody or Semedo, I don't think any of them are good enough to win the ball, I think Maximan, frequently enough. So I think it's going to be a fixture that could be all right. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. But Wolves probably the favourite. But yeah, it's probably a fixture that we might do okay and see. I'll go 1-1 draw.
Yeah, I think I'd agree most of that. I don't think the games have always been pretty nip and tuck tight by virtue of how the team's set up. And I think it'll be an interesting test of Nuno's style, actually, because it'll probably be the first game where we'll play a team who are more happy not having the ball and you know, Mason. So it'd be interesting to see whether Wolves actually get on the front foot, control the possession a bit more and try to dominate the game a bit more. But my gut instinct is it will probably be another not, you know, close, you know, decided by fine margins kind of game, which all four, I think, games in the Premier League against Newcastle have been. We've got a good month of fixtures, really, so it'd be nice to see us put some points on the board. I'll probably be predicting us to get a narrow win, but as Jake said, it could very easily, with the players they've got, if they're defensively sound, Wolves don't generally create a lot of chances, and they've got the players to, you know, to hurt us at the other end with a moment of brilliance. So, yeah, be an interesting game. Hopefully, it's a bit more entertaining than some of the ones we've seen in the recent years.
All right, well, we'll definitely keep an eye on that one, assuming that we don't have to pay $15 to do so. Really appreciate both of you coming on today. If you'd like to tell folks where to find you or anything you're working on, now would be a good time.
Yeah, you can get me on Twitter at @JakeJackwood2ends. I write for EPL Index. I'm on the Championship show on this channel sometimes. So yeah, check those out as well.
Yeah, if you want to get your Wolves fix, or you're a opposition fan playing Wolves, you can come onto the blog at wolvesblog.com, or get us on Twitter at wolvesblog or facebook.com/wolvesblog if you want to get the lowdown on Wolves. Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Yeah, thanks so much to both of you. Again, I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff. You can find the show at EPL Roundtable on Twitter and by searching it on any of your favorite podcasting things. An absolute pleasure speaking to you two. And folks at home, we hope you keep listening.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.